You are listening to The Bird Calls. For more breakdowns on the Pelicans, including interviews with coaches, journalists, and opposing experts, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today. What's up, Pels fans? Today we've got two excerpts from my appearances on NBA Outlet and Howl Radio addressing Boogie and where the Pels go from here. Check back tomorrow for our usual episode with Ollie and Kevin breaking down the Clippers and more. We should have that up for you by about 6 p.m. Enjoy.
Moving on to the DeMarcus Cousins injury, we're going to bring on special guest Preston Ellis. He's the host of the Bird Calls podcast, part of the OTG Podcast Network. He does a great job over there, so check that out. But sadly, we're going to bring him on to talk about the DeMarcus Cousins injury, who went down on a Friday night with a ruptured Achilles tendon. Terrible news around the league. We wanted to bring Preston on to give us some coverage from New Orleans and, you know, the feel of that whole fan base and everything over there. So, Preston, what was your reaction when DeMarcus Cousins went down?
Man, it's difficult to describe because obviously this is difficult for everybody in the National Basketball Association. Like we saw the outpouring of love with the injuries to Paul George, Gordon Hayward, and we saw very similar outpouring for DeMarcus Cousins for something as simple as an Achilles tear, which is it's not simple. It's obviously serious and it's career altering. We've seen it happen to Wesley Matthews and Rudy Gay, and those guys are playing well, but you could argue that they're not their former selves. Wesley Matthews was on the verge of getting a max level contract. Rudy Gay, obviously a bit past his prime and got back a lot quicker. And that's the upside for DeMarcus Cousins. But I was just talking to you guys off the air that the thing that is so crippling about DeMarcus is not the injury in itself. That's just the tip of the iceberg. What it really boils down to is DeMarcus as a person, the attacks on his character that have been levied over the life of his career. He's been called a cancer, a coach killer. This year, just 2 weeks ago, Justin Verrier of The Ringer not only questioned him starting in the All-Star game, questioned whether or not he had the validity to even be in it. And Pelicans fans nodded in agreement because he is just a head-scratching player, a guy who, you know, complains with calls. He gets the technical fouls. He doesn't run back on defense. Well, the last 3 weeks, guys, he was doing all of it. He was putting up 25, 13, and 5. Any guy who's ever averaged that over a season, over the course of a season, it's happened four times. Every single one of them took home a Most Valuable Player award. The team was winning 8 out of 9 games, but more than that, you hurt for this guy and you hurt for the franchise because he just lost out on the designated player extension last year when Sacramento traded him. That would have made him eligible for the Russell Westbrook deal, the 5 years, $207 million deal, which Steph Curry got as well. But he was still eligible this summer with the New Orleans Pelicans for the 5 year, $176 million deal that Blake Griffin just signed. And every prognosticator, I don't care if the guys with the Celtics and the guys with the Cavaliers who are always rumoring trades, this guy's interested, it's all BS. The fact is DeMarcus Cousins was coming back, and if he wasn't coming back for that 5 years, he was coming back for a 2+1 just so that he could get back on the market for the Supermax, which is that $207 million deal at your 10-year veteran, I don't know, standing. Once you get to the 10-year threshold, you guys know what I'm saying.
Yep.
But to see that happen, now you send the franchise into a tailspin. Now Dell Demps and Alvin Gentry, if their leash wasn't short, boy, they're not going to make it through this offseason, barring a miracle. Barring the Pelicans have no depth. Jrue Holiday, DeMarcus Cousins, and Anthony Davis are top 10 in minutes played. And people are going to say to you, you're going to see this on Twitter, that Anthony Davis plays better with DeMarcus Cousins off the floor. That may be true, but guess who's behind Anthony Davis now? Omar Asik. And some combination of Dante Cunningham, hopefully Solomon Hill can be back in a month, but he has never played any minutes consistently at the four position. He's going to be forced to coming back from that torn hamstring. And more so than that, you just have to think about DeMarcus and his family. He went from 5 years, $176 million deal, rumors of LeBron being interested in the New Orleans Pelicans, rumors of him picking DeMarcus first because he wanted the opportunity to experiment playing with he and Anthony Davis. And now, who's to say what this guy's going to get offered? You have to think that the Pelicans have no other choice to bring him back, but what is he going to get? A 1 year experimental max offer, maybe a 1+1 with the second being a team option. Like he just went from being an MVP level candidate to possibly not getting a payday at all. And some people, and they've been thrown off of Twitter at this point, are saying our own Fletcher Mackle of WDSU said, you know what, guys, you're going to hate me, but it's time to ask the question, should we trade DeMarcus Cousins before the deadline? And obviously all you would get in exchange is cap relief. And that's what people are talking about now. One of the best five players in the NBA this season, getting rid of for cap relief. But more so than that, and I'm monologuing, so I'll wrap this up. Just for the city, it's really tough for the city. We almost lost the Hornets to Oklahoma City following Katrina, and Chris Paul and David Stern fought hard to bring them back. But we've got a 92-year-old owner who's in a custody battle over the New Orleans Pelicans and the New Orleans Saints with his grandchildren, who are fighting tooth and nail to get it from him. They want to move the team. Rita, his third wife, you know, she's a very sweet woman, but she has no interest in New Orleans. She's lived here for the better part of 30 years, but you know, somebody from Seattle says they want to give her $3 billion to take the, I mean, who's to say what could happen? And the city was just on the cusp. Like, this couldn't have been a bigger stage, you guys. On ESPN, the second best team in the NBA. You've got Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Chris Paul, all these former Hornets coming back to town. That in itself draws attention. And you see DeMarcus Cousins tear his Achilles, not on any run of mill play, the last possession of the game, fighting off his missed free throw. What if he makes that free throw? What happens differently in that 4-second window if he just manages to hit that second free throw? The game is essentially over. It's just fouls at that point. But instead, he gives full effort, fights for the ball, and that's how it happens. And it's hard to express how devastating it is. I'm not smart enough to be able to do it justice. Kevin Pelton has a great article. A lot of guys in New Orleans, Kevin O'Connor has a great stuff. I encourage everybody to check that out. But I'll wrap this up, guys. It's just in a word, devastating. Top five worst moments in New Orleans sports history.
Yeah, I said, President, before you got in here, you know, for the injury to happen, it was on a hustle play. You know, the thing that people say Cousins doesn't do at times or whatnot, you know, like you said, he was chasing down a missed free throw. You know, he was giving 110%. And, you know, I know it was, I read a tweet about this too, that, you know, this past month he's logged more minutes than he ever has his entire career. You know, who knows if that played a part into it. I mean, it probably played some kind of part into it. And like you said, now there's all this uncertainty. You know, do they want to re-sign him for the max? Do they still take a chance to re-sign him? Does he come back like he was from this injury to be the same player that he was this year? You know, do free agents want to come down and play with DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis now, not knowing what to expect? Like you said, it brings the entire city into a certain state of uncertainty and what will be or what could have been.
Yeah, Preston did a great job. And the impact this injury not only had on the Pelicans, their future, but overall New Orleans and their location is, you know, very important to what's going to happen. I think the Cousins injury, too, you made a great point, Preston, is how is he going to come back from the Achilles injury? We've seen guys come back healthy, and luckily, you know, Cousins isn't that super athlete. He's not a guy who's getting over the rim, throwing down crazy dunks. He's doing a lot of stuff underneath with his size. What do you think is what's going to happen when he comes back? How long is it going to take Cousins to get to an all-star type level when he returns from this injury?
Well, this is the difficult part. We've seen firsthand that Wesley Matthews and Rudy Gay, being a freak of nature, he's been an efficient player this year. But we've seen Kobe Bryant, all three of these guys, and any guy of his size who suffers this injury, they don't come back. And if they do come back, it's a year and a half to 2 years minimum before they're close to 100%. You know, guys don't get injured like this and come back bigger and better and stronger and faster. The good news is, like you guys said, DeMarcus Cousins can't jump over a phone book, but he does use his agility to drive at the top of the key. He likes to take those big men off the dribble. He's got that spin move that he utilizes, and it helps get you know, shooters open on the wing, and it helps him get to the cup. And it is something that he utilizes, and he's definitely going to lose that aspect of his game. But other than that, you know, he's not an incredibly athletic guy. He doesn't really run the floor at an aggressive pace. You know, he kind of slowly trots up, but you know, it does diminish from what he has. And what's even a bigger point is the timing. At the trade deadline, it's too late for the Pelicans to qualify for the disabled player exception, which would have given us $18 million to offer to a buyout player like Greg Monroe or to Andrew Bogut. We could have offered these guys more than anybody else across the association, but we're just 2 weeks late. Not only that, the rehab at best is going to bring him back to the practice floor, I want to say November, December. And at that point, free agency is done. It's too late. It's too late to bring in any of these guys, like you mentioned, guys that might potentially want to play with New Orleans for a discount once they see how well the team has done. That option is now off the table. So that removes Dell Demps and Alvin Gentry, who at this point, everybody's throwing around all these trade ideas. We're doing it in New Orleans. How are we going to get them help? That's hilarious. That sounds like a little guy. I have an American Eskimo behind me myself.
Sorry about that.
No, no worries. The troubling thing is, at this point, the Pelicans need help. They need depth. But you can't let Dell Demps go and get it for them. You can't let him offload salary, because by offloading bad salary like Alexis Ejenson, Omar Asik, you're going to have to sacrifice first-round picks. And we don't have a first-round pick dating back to 2012, that just being Anthony Davis. Other than him, we don't have a first-round pick on the roster. We've got two second-round picks who we're hoping become NBA players. Frank Jackson just re-aggravated his broken foot. It was a stress fracture, and he re-broke it. And Cheick Diallo has been a disaster defensively. He has a lot of upside and potential. He's only been playing basketball for about 5 years. So, you know, you hope those guys can be rotation-level players. But New Orleans is screwed. They can't offload these guys. They can't send out picks. They are who they are right now, and everybody's saying that they could still manage to get to the eighth seed because they are about four games up on the Clippers, something around there. And you know, there is the likelihood with Jrue Holiday and Anthony Davis playing well that maybe they get enough wins. They need to finish somewhere around like 14-20 to finish with a 500 record. But what does that get you? That gets you an eighth seed at finish, and that gets you a 4-0 sweep against the Golden State Warriors, which we've already experienced in 2014 and 15. And that's not enough to pique interest in New Orleans at this point. We're tired of that. We want to get to the second round. We want to win a couple of first round games. We want to stir some momentum going into the next season, especially with only 2 years remaining on Anthony Davis's contract. It's time to make a push, and it just couldn't come at a worse time. And should Dell Demps be able to bring in talent like a Jonathan Simmons or something with a first round pick, or Damari Carroll or something, a lot of people are going to be really upset because he doesn't deserve that benefit of the doubt at this point. You can blame the injuries. 3 years ago, we had 352 games missed to injury. That's an all-time NBA record. This year, of course, you're losing Boogie Cousin. Last year, we lost Jrue Holiday for the first 12 games of the season. We started out 0-8. So you can make a lot of excuses, but after 8 years, it doesn't matter what the problem is. It's time to change things up. And man, The positive thing is DeMarcus Cousins is probably going to be a Pelican going back. This further solidifies this. It's very unlikely that, you know, the Phoenix Suns or the Dallas Mavericks come in with a 3-year, $90 million contract. So that is the silver lining to this. Even if he's not the player that he was, you have to believe that he's still a top 10 level center and somebody who has great chemistry with Anthony Davis. If you guys got a chance to watch the Houston Rockets game, it was beautiful. Their chemistry, their pick and pop, their pick and roll. I think Anthony Davis had like 5 alley-oops in the first quarter, and the majority of them were thrown from DeMarcus Cousins. So it was beautiful to watch. And like I said, hopefully he can bring some of that back next year.
Yeah, go ahead, Corey.
I was just saying, you know, I watched that Chicago Bulls game a few nights ago when they came back and they won a double OT. You know, you can make an argument that if they have the right pieces around them, that Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, and the Pelicans, you know, they could be one of the best teams, if not the best team in the league, because there is just no way to guard Cousins and Davis when they are both healthy and on the floor. And like you said, you know, the injuries in the past, and you haven't been able to bring in a lot of guys in the past that kind of like build around Davis and now, you know, Cousins and all that. But the team has always been, you know, just right there. And now it's not a state. Now you're at a point where, you know, it's what could have been.
Yeah.
I know you think, you know, Gentry will be fired and the GM will probably be fired too. But, you know, the Pelicans issue is constantly, it's a what could have been scenario. It's not like, you know, this is where we are. It's, you know, we came up short. It's always been like a what could have been.
Yeah, definitely. And just to put a lighter spin on things, Now teams around the NBA are on watch. Players around the NBA are on watch. The Pelicans won 8 of 9. And like you said, they're unguardable. Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, especially with the way that Jrue Holiday, he's having the best year of his career, both defensively and offensively. But what really makes these guys special is the way that they were playing defense the past 3 weeks. They were shutting teams down. You mentioned the Chicago Bulls. We spotted them an 18-point lead, excuse me, with 7:30 left in the game, 7:33 specifically. And Anthony Davis was quoted after the game, and he said, "We just decided to play defense. We just talked in the huddle, and we said we're going to play defense from this point out." Think about that. They were not playing hard up until that point. Now, that in itself is very frustrating. You're like, these guys should be playing hard 48 minutes. And then you just take into account that they're all averaging close to 40 minutes a game. They're probably pretty tired. They're probably trying to save themselves for a fourth quarter push. But 18 down, they shut the Bulls down. I can't remember exactly what the run was. They finished on something like a 21-3 run. Just obliterated the Chicago Bulls. Obviously, you're like, they're the Bulls. They're not even in the playoff picture right now. The Bulls at this point had been on like a 17-8 run, I want to say, with Nikola Mirotic back in the lineup. They were playing beautiful basketball. They were shooting well. They were great defensively. And the Pelicans just shut them down. They just said, you're not scoring again for the final 7.5 minutes. And it all started with Jrue Holiday, Anthony Davis, and DeMarcus Cousins. DeMarcus, for all the grief we've given him, like I said, the past 3 weeks, he's been an all-NBA defensive type player. And players know that now, and coaches know that now. There's a lot of respect for him around the league. And though he won't come back at 100%, they know how good he is when he is healthy. And maybe just the promise of that possibility could be enough to stir up some interest in New Orleans this offseason.
Yeah, and I think you hit a great point as well. The fact that the Pelicans were doing so well, and they had just beaten a Boston Celtics team not that long ago, and the Houston Rockets team right there, you know, getting wins over two of the top five teams in the league, and then picking up the defense, seeing the effort paying off, I think the Pelicans were really set on a nice stretch moving forward. But obviously the injury really hurts that. What do you think? We talked about this actually on one of our previous pods. What do you think about a trade for the Pelicans where they pick up Dwayne Dedmon from Atlanta for Alexis Ajinka, Cheick Diallo, and a second-round pick?
I just don't think the Hawks do it. Obviously, Dwayne Dedmon is a player that the Pelicans desperately need, and he's a perfect fit. He's not being utilized there. Nerlens Noel is another possibility. Jonathan Simmons is somebody that rings some ears in Orlando. If you have some combination of like Elfrid Payton and Jonathan Simmons for Omar Asik and a first-round pick, but that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a first-round pick. Nobody wants another year of Alexis Ajinka at $5 million. He's dead salary. It's going to take more than a second. We've seen how close to the vest NBA general managers are keeping their salary going forward at this point in time. And even somebody at $5.3 million, which is what Alexis Ajinka has promised in 2018-19 season, it's just too much. It's too much. And the Pelicans don't have the asset like a Cheick Diallo you mentioned, but he's been unplayable defensively. He's a guy who picked up three fouls and a three-second violation in his first minute on the NBA court this year. He's beautiful offensively. He dominates summer league, but you put him against the big boys and he just can't stay on the floor. But he does have a beautiful jumper, a great inside game. Offensively, he's definitely going to be a contributor in this league if he can figure out his defensive awareness, but he just hasn't yet. And so you have to think that he's a minus at this point, or at least even. Frank Jackson, same thing, but the only player who's movable at this point in time is really Etuan Moore, but the Pelicans need him. He's part of their crunch time lineup. He's the best shooter in the NBA. If he's not right now, he was 3 weeks ago. He's around 45% from three-point range and has been all season long. He was 57% in December. He was unconscious. He's been a little bit slower this month, so his numbers have dipped. But he's great defensively. They've been asking him to play the three. He's the only contract they can move and actually get something in return from. Like, they could do a Jonathan Simmons, Etuan Moore swap, you'd have to believe, because he's such a valuable defender and shooter. But yeah, in order to move Ajinka, it's going to take a first round pick. And there's a lot of guys pulling right now for some combination of Marco Bellinelli and Dwayne Dedmon for, I don't know, probably Asik and a first round pick. If we do send a first round pick, it's got to be for Asik. Ajinka, his contract is too small. It's not worth it. We can just stretch him in the offseason or wait until the trade deadline next year when that $5 million expiring might be a bit more valuable. It's just the price is a bit too high, especially with Boogie out. If the Pelicans do manage to fall out of the playoffs, that could potentially be a 14th overall pick, 15th overall pick, somewhere in that area. So it's just too valuable to try to what? I don't know, win two games in the first round, maybe get an eighth seeded finish. It's just, you got to hang on to that pick. If nothing else, you wait until the summer and maybe you can get something a bit more valuable then when teams are ready to offload some better contributors or somebody on a longer term deal.
I have to ask you this. What are your, obviously everybody in the NBA world wants to know. I have my thoughts and Corey has his. Is the probability change that, you know, the Pelicans trade Anthony Davis, or does this, you know, confirm that they're going to keep him now for sure? No, go ahead. I want to hear your thoughts on this.
The Pelicans will never trade Anthony Davis unless he requests to be traded.
That 100% agree.
100%. It's not going to happen. He is the franchise. It would be crippling. This city can't go through another rebuild. We're seeing it in Orlando right now. They've been 5 years out of the playoffs, and they're starting over again. And you can just hear it in the voices of the media guys, of John Hammond, of Jeff Weltman, of Frank Vogel, everybody involved with that franchise. It's just too much for a city that doesn't really care about basketball. And Orlando does, because they've got the, you know, Orlando soccer team. Other than that, the city is about the Orlando Magic. In New Orleans, they don't have that advantage. People love the LSU Tigers. They love the New Orleans Saints. Everybody has a New Orleans Saint flag out front. So the Pelicans cannot afford that. And there's not a big enough return in the NBA to keep the Pelicans as a contender at one at this point. Everybody's going to say, you know, some version of Jason Tatum. And we're all sick and tired of hearing the Jason Tatum for Anthony Davis comparisons. And I'm not going to go into it because I don't think it deserves a minute of our time. But there's not the trade partner out there. If anything, it would have to be two like all-star level players, because that's how well the Pelicans revere Anthony Davis. CJ McCollum in a first round pick is not going to be enough. CJ McCollum in a top five pick would not be enough. The Pelicans think Anthony Davis is the best player in the association, given the right circumstance, given 100% locked in. Obviously you've got Kevin Durant, and LeBron James, but with those guys out of the picture, there is not a single player in the NBA that the Pelicans would trade Anthony Davis for, unless, like I said, he has to be traded. So he's going to finish out his contract here, and things could change this offseason when they bring in a new general manager. Maybe Sam Hinkie has a different direction in mind. But right now, the rumored people are Danny Ferry, of course, the former general manager of the Atlanta Hawks, has been a close advisor to Dell Demps, and Joe Dumars, which I think would be a disaster. But those are the names right now. And obviously, Dell Demps has until the offseason to try to keep these guys going, try to keep them afloat. And right now, their best possible hope is buyout candidates. And those have to be some version of Andrew Bogut, maybe Greg Monroe, maybe Vince Carter. They're going to have to hope that somebody asks to come to New Orleans, that somebody sees Anthony Davis, sees that open center position and says, I want to play with that guy. And right now, it's Andrew Bogut's our best bet. If we could get Greg Monroe, that would be that could potentially be a season changer. And by season changer, I don't mean we're going all the way. I mean, you know, possibly stay around the fifth seed and or the sixth seed and get a chance at San Antonio and Minnesota. And that would just change everything going forward. That would be a scenario where maybe Dell Demps and Alvin Gentry buy another year. Maybe Boogie Cousins gets a 1+1 and they try to sign Greg Monroe. But man, to get negative again, the Pelicans have no flexibility going forward financially. So they don't even have the resources to bring back a Greg Monroe, even if he came back on a team friendly deal. Things are just tough in New Orleans right now, and this couldn't have come at a worse time. But with that being said, like, we saw what they could be, and that promise, that glimmer of hope is something that you can hold on to going forward when DeMarcus Cousins comes back, whether it be in January, February, March, is that we know what the team can be, and that's a contending level team.
Agreed. I think that's, you've seen enough of that team where you know. And then the one thing I think that you could have in your back pocket, obviously we could all agree that Cousins probably is never going to hit the level that we've seen him at, but Anthony Davis is going to continue to get better, and there's plenty of more levels for him to hit. And you could probably argue Drew Holiday probably could hit another level as well, especially having a good year that he's having right now. So there are some pluses if Cousins can come back at some point and get to 80% of what he was.
Definitely. And you couldn't be more right about Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday over the life of his career. Oh, that's my dog now. We're taking turns. Drew Holiday over the life of his career has been better with one big on the floor, and that big being, you know, either Anthony Davis or DeMarcus Cousins. But you put two on the floor and it takes away some of his spacing. But he figured that out this year. And this year he's shooting better from 2-point range than he has in his entire career, shooting above 57%. Obviously his 3-point range is only at about 34 right now, I want to say, but there is another level with more spacing, with more opportunity for him to be aggressive, which is when he excels. When he's timid and he looks indecisive, that's when he gets the 5 turnover games, and his shooting suffers and he's forcing passes that he doesn't need to force. So you're absolutely right, but the Pelicans are in trouble here because they have no depth, and they're going to have to insert either Dante Cunningham, who's been a disaster this season, or Omar Asik, who some could argue doesn't even belong on an NBA roster anymore at this point in his career. So the choices really aren't very attractive at this point for who's going to take Boogie's minutes, but we're going to get a glimpse, I think, in about an hour and 2 minutes right now, of who this Pelicans team is going to be going forward when they match up with the Los Angeles Clippers. And it's probably another nationally televised game, so there's going to be a lot of eyes on it. And Boogie's been in good spirits. He did his comedy jam that he's been advertising for about 3 months. He's been with the team watching film. He should go into surgery at this point this week, but having him around, having that positive energy might be enough to if the Pelicans can come out and have a decisive victory. They've got a tough schedule in the next 5 to 6 games before they get to the trade deadline. If they can make some waves here, they might get a couple of guys, a couple of Vince Carters and Greg Monroe to say, you know what? I like what that team's doing. They need minutes. I'm going to give it to them. And maybe it gets me one more great contract before I retire.
I would love to see Greg Monroe in New Orleans. Obviously, like you mentioned, with the cap issue, him staying past this season could be, not a real possibility, but I would like to see him down there. And like you mentioned, though, he's going to be the real problem with them. Who can you really bring in? Hopefully a buyout of, Vince Carter or Andrew Bogut can get down there. But like you mentioned with DeMarcus Cousins being around the team, I know I saw a tweet about him being around and watching film with the guys. I think that also proves your point that he is going to stick around with the Pelicans. Like, he doesn't want to go anywhere. He's not pushing away from the team. He's not secluding himself. He's still being there with the guys. That's one thing as well that you can look forward to as a Pelicans fan, is that he doesn't, seem to already be out the door.
If I could add one more thing before I let you guys in, Nerlens Noel and Scal Labissiere, some guys who are recently on the block. Nerlens Noel's not being utilized in Dallas. I think it's almost they're just holding him out of scorn at this point. If they would be willing to, they would have to take back salary, but it would have to be two expirings like a Dante Cunningham and a Jameer Nelson or something in exchange for Nerlens Noel and a second round pick. That could be an avenue where a second round pick could get a real difference maker, but that's the only one I really see.
Yeah, I think a second round pick could get it done for Noel. Like you said, obviously Dallas is not going to keep him. That's been a terrible situation where he's shown a lot of potential when he was on the floor, but behind the scenes, it's not working out. Going to give a big shout out to Preston. Thank you for hopping on. Obviously, best wishes to DeMarcus Cousins, New Orleans Pelicans, and all the injured players we talked about in this pod. Corey, thank you for hopping on, and thanks to all the listeners for listening in.
You guys are awesome. Thanks.
All right, here we are on Nothing But Net on Dash Radio. We are joined by Preston Ellis. Preston, thanks for joining us.
Of course, man. First-time guest. Thrilled to be on here, man.
Yeah, definitely glad to have you. We're pleased to have your multiple shows now on the network. Whether it's, Pelicans, which obviously you've been covering for a while, and then, your newest venture into the Orlando Magic market.
Yeah, thanks so much. For you guys listening, you can follow us at The Bird Rice, but the podcast is actually called The Bird Calls, and we just reached 70,000 downloads this week in our first season, so we're thrilled about that one. And the Orlando Magic one is called Do You Believe in Magic? And you can follow our site at OrlandoPinstripePost.com. We've only done about 8 or 9 episodes on that one, so that one's new. But if any of you are interested in the Pelicans or the Orlando Magic, be sure to follow those two places.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and it's much listen, because whether you like the Magic, whether you like the Pelicans, you guys always have really good information regarding, recent games, what we're going to talk about here, obviously, with the player injury. You guys are always up to date on that stuff, which is really cool.
Yeah, we have a lot of great inside sources over in New Orleans. You'll see us talking to coaches. We'll talk to local reporters. We'll talk to some national media guys. We've spoken to some guys from The Ringer in the past few months. The Orlando Magic one is on the rise, and we've been talking to a lot of people in the area. And it's a very exciting time to be an Orlando Magic fan, because the trade deadline, they're a big time seller, one of the top 5 sellers in the NBA right now. They're going to have a lot of moving pieces, so it's going to draw a lot of interest in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, before we touch on the Pelicans, so what are your thoughts on the Magic? Are there any players specifically you think, or positions maybe they're going to target come trade deadline time?
Well, they're not going to target anything specifically, you'd have to think, unless they take on some project for a project. Like, I don't know, I'm thinking like Dante Exum for Mario Hezonja, that sort of thing, where
sure,
other teams are taking a flyer on Hezonja, and in exchange, the Magic get to take a flyer on an Emmanuel Mudiay or somebody that maybe has fallen out of favor, but he's still a young player with potential upside. That could be something that happens. But the Magic are really principally trying to offload salary at this point. Bismack Biyombo is immovable. He's still got 2 years and $34 million left. But somebody who's been rumored around the league to have interest is Evan Fournier. And I'm not sure that anybody is willing to take on the remaining 3 years and $51 million, although the third year is a player option. You'd think he would opt in. I think it might take something more from the Magic to offload him, something like, a second-round pick at this point. I don't think anybody's going to take him straight up unless they gave back more bad salary, just because it is such an inflated contract. But you might see some guys moving, like an Elfrid Payton, like a Shelvin Mack. Mack is attractive because he's only partially guaranteed next year at $1 million. So it's a quality expiring, and he can give you some valuable minutes in the meantime. And Elfrid Payton, if you get the rights to him, he's a restricted free agent, and you have the opportunity to match any deal if you're high on him and you want to give him an opportunity going forward. And there are said to be teams out there that are interested in him, maybe as a six-man type player, a guy who can engineer the second-team offense. But they're not said to be interested in moving Aaron Gordon and Jonathan Isaac, and those are the two big ones with the two big price tags on their faces. But it would take an out of the ballpark type number because the Magic are not ready to just restart the whole rebuilding process. Obviously, they're doing that to some degree, but they do have building pieces in Aaron Gordon and Jonathan Isaac. And if they offloaded one of those two guys, man, it would just cause anarchy in the city of Orlando. And of course, they're disappointed to the broken wrist of Nikola Vucevic, because he was one player who was said to be a quality piece to move. He's just got 1 year and $12.5 million, and he is a valuable piece, especially offensively, and a great rebounder. So they're hopeful that he can come back at some point, but he's come out and said that he doesn't want to be traded, and they're so high on him, you'd think they wouldn't force him out unless he wanted to be. So it's definitely going to be interesting. There's no telling who could move. Jonathan Simmons is another good one that I haven't mentioned. He's on a great quality contract, 2 years and $13 million left. And he's a valuable guy off the bench. If not, he can give you some minutes at three starting, but he's a lot more valuable in limited time against bench units. But it should be exciting. There's no telling what could happen. It's said to be a quiet trade deadline, but we've predicted that before and been very wrong. So we'll see what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's so tough to gauge a young team that's kind of embracing the rebuild. But like you said, you already have a couple nice pieces for the future in Aaron Gordon, Jonathan Isaac. But as far as the Magic are concerned, I've always felt like, at least the way they're built right now, they have nice pieces, but they don't have a team, if that makes sense. You know, there's individual players that can do some nice things that you really appreciate. You mentioned Mario Hezonja. That's a guy that it seems like he's very polarizing with a lot of Magic fans when it comes to him. It's almost like they think of him as just this huge disappointment. And I can understand that. Although he's one of those guys that when he plays the Wolves as our specific team, he always finds a way to contribute to us losing, of course. But I always feel like there's just a number of players on the team that are good players, but when it comes to the team dynamic, you just don't see the success.
Yeah, under Scott Skiles, you saw Mario Hezonja as a starting two guard and as a three. And you got to credit Frank Vogel, because he gave him minutes at the four. And a lot of us scratched our heads at the time, but he's been very valuable coming off the bench as a four. He's not shy about shooting the ball. He's gotten better defensively. You know, he's only, I want to say, 22 years old at this point. So he's still just a caterpillar on his way to becoming a butterfly. Now, what kind of butterfly he's going to look like, that's hard to tell at this point. But he is an NBA player. And that's saying a lot in terms of what we were saying this offseason. This offseason, nobody was willing to unload a second round pick, which is all it would have taken to get him and the rights to his qualifying year. But the Magic passed on that. And you'd have to think they're regretting that at this point. So he will be an unrestricted free agent. If somebody wants to take a flyer on him and give up an expiring or I don't know, maybe like a lightly protected second round pick, they can have him. And that's not saying nothing, because Mario Hezonja has been, I don't have his numbers in front of me, but ever since he's been in the starting lineup in the past, I want to say 6 weeks, he's been averaging around 13 points at 47% shooting, something like 39% from three. He's been playing better defense, and he gives you the occasional highlight bonehead play, like when he was 4-on-1 and he tried to go between his legs and threw a turnover. So definitely an entertaining guy, but one who is very young and a guy who's getting better. So if a team is willing to be patient, they might get a seventh player in a rotation, maybe an eighth player in a rotation, but somebody who can definitely contribute to a good team.
Yeah, like you said, he's definitely proven to be an NBA player. It's just kind of finding the right fit for him. The other name you mentioned, and this is a guy we're a big fan of. So last offseason, we did a free agent kind of NCAA-style tournament on our show, and it came down to, for the Wolves, two players, Patty Mills from the Spurs, and then the other guy is the guy you mentioned, Jonathan Simmons. We've been a big fan of his. Do you think that's a guy they will look to unload then?
I mean, it depends on what they're going to get back because they obviously are very high on him too. He fits the mold of the player. Like, you know, we talk about Jeff Weltman trying to put his stamp on the franchise and John Hammond trying to put his stamp on the franchise. And right now that stamp is just Sheldon Mack on a very cap-friendly deal. He's only guaranteed, like I said, $1 million next year. He's got $6 million on the books, but that all falls apart if they don't pick up his option, which you'd have to think at this point that they won't. Other than that, the only guy that they brought in was Jonathan Simmons on an incredibly attractive 3-year, $20 million contract. And he's got 2 years of that left, and he's a valuable piece. He's an aggressive guy. He's a try-hard guy. He's a team first guy. And he was playing exceptionally well, having the best season of his career when he was coming off the bench in a 6-man role since he's been inserted into the starting lineup. It's been a bit precarious. And a lot of us in Orlando have been calling to move him back to the bench and put Mario Hezonja in the starting lineup. Frank Vogel's had yet to pull that trigger, but Simmons has been better this month. So we'll see what happens, but he's definitely a valuable guy, definitely on a great deal. And there's definitely a lot of teams that could use that type help. And one being the New Orleans Pelicans, my other squad. So they'll definitely gauge the interest, but I think it would take at least a first round pick to move him because they do like having him in Orlando. And I think he sets the tone for the team they want to be going forward.
Yeah, and that's the tough thing about a trade for, in this example, Jonathan Simmons. First round picks are just such a commodity now with how the salary cap is obviously not, it didn't raise to the level that people were expecting. So that's made a big difference. And you talk about like Bismack Biyombo, a guy the Wolves have, Gorgui Dieng. Some of these contracts are almost unmovable unless you're willing to give up like a first round pick. But then you're giving up a future asset. So like you said, it's going to be tough for them to find a good match if they do try to move Jonathan Simmons. So who knows what will actually happen there. You mentioned your other team, though, the Pelicans. Kind of give us a rundown of what you think is going to happen going forward. Obviously, Cousins with that ruptured left Achilles. I mean, you look at how productive he was being this season, having statistically probably the best season of his career. What are they going to do going forward to try to, you know, make up for that loss of production?
Before we talk about the future, I just want to give DeMarcus Cousins some credit. Not only was it the best year of his career, he was averaging over 25, 13 rebounds, and over 5 assists. Any player who has done that ever has won the Most Valuable Player Award, and there's only 4 of those guys who have ever hit those numbers. So he was not just in a career best trajectory, but an all-time best level trajectory. The last 3 weeks, not only was he doing all the things that we've all lauded over the years, you know, the offense, the rebounding, the athleticism, and by athleticism, I mean just like driving a bigger defender, another center from the three-point line all the way to the cup with his spin moves, combination of finishing, that sort of stuff. But the stuff that he was criticized for, and this is what I really want to push forward, the coach killing, the cancer in the locker room, all these awful titles that he's been giving, the technical fouls, the guy who doesn't try hard. Well, the past 3 weeks, he was trying very, very hard. You even had Justin Barrier at the Ringer say that not only did he not belong in the starting lineup of the All-Star game, you could argue he didn't belong in the game itself. And when you think about, you know, those clips of him not hustling back on defense, the complaining to the officials, you can definitely give credence to that. The problem is, in the past 3 weeks, that hasn't been the player who's played for the New Orleans Pelicans. This guy has bought in defensively, try hard, complaining less, running up and down the court. The Pelicans have won 8 of 9, 9 of 11. The Bulls, when he scored 44, 24, and 10, and 4 steals, the last 7:33 of that game, the Pelicans were trailing by 18, and he and Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday just decided they weren't going to let the Bulls score anymore. And the same thing with the Rockets. The thing that's so, I don't want to say depressing, devastating about his injury was he did it trying hard. He did it trying to get an offensive rebound following his own free throw miss. What happens if he makes that free throw and doesn't chase down that board? But he just shows you the kind of player that he can be. Now, with that being said, with all of this happening, and now his potential 5-year, $176 million contract that you'd have to assume was a lock with the New Orleans Pelicans, that's potentially out the window at this point. You'd have to think they bring him back on a 1-year prove it max level contract, maybe a 1+1, maybe a 2-year deal if they're being nice, because that would get him to his 10th veteran year, and that would get him to his possible super max extension, which we all saw. It's basically the Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry 5-year, $207 million deal. But now with things the way that they are, not only is his future in flux, The franchise is in flux. This is a team that's never won. You've got a 92-year-old owner who's got grandkids fighting over ownership. He's got his third wife, Rita, who does live in New Orleans. But, you know, if something should happen and Seattle comes in with a $3 billion deal, this was the closest the New Orleans Pelicans have ever been to mattering in New Orleans. And just the way that the game crested with us beating the second best team in the world in front of guys like Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Chris Paul, and Ryan Anderson, all these former Hornets and former Pelicans on ESPN in the Smoothie King Center on a Friday night, coming in, having won 7 of 8, the electricity in that arena, for it all to fall apart. Now everything changes because Dell Demps and Alvin Gentry were on prove it last year's of their deal. And now even if the Pelicans should, you know, squeak in as an eighth seed, they'd have to win 14 of their last 20. That seems unlikely. Even if they should do that, it's not going to be enough. And now you're in this position where you have to unload salary and offload picks in order to get some kind of talent back. You know, a lot of people are talking about Dwayne Dedman, Nerlens Noel, Andrew Bogut as a potential buyout candidate. In order to get these guys, you're going to have to offload salary. You're going to have to give up picks. And in order to do that, I just don't think they have the leash to do that at this point. Being, you know, 8 years now, Dell Demps has been in New Orleans, and he's only had 2 playoff finishes, 1 and 8 seed where they finished 2 and 4 against the Los Angeles Lakers. No, that was a 7 seed, excuse me. And then an 8 seed against the Warriors just 2 years ago, where, of course, they were swept 4-0. Another 8-seeded sweep doesn't get it done at this point. And I don't think there's a first-round pick. I don't think there's a trade out there that gets you enough, a building block going forward that's worth it to Mickey Loomis to allow Dell Demps to mortgage their future. Like you guys probably all know, the Pelicans don't have a single first-round pick on their roster not named Anthony Davis. They just haven't been smart with their picks. They've offloaded them at every opportunity, and now they're stuck, and now it's probably going to cost them their jobs. And is it fair? No. The best we can hope for in New Orleans is buyout candidates, probably, or some kind of, I don't know, lucky break where somebody like Dallas is fed up with Nerlens Noel, and maybe they do us a solid and let us, you know, have them for a second round pick, and we offload something like a Dante Cunningham and Jameer Nelson. We have to give them back expirings. There's no way anybody's going to take Alexis Ejensa or Omar Asik for less than a first round pick, and I just don't think Mickey Loomis lets Dell do that, be that frivolous with our picks. So the best we can hope for at this point is that somebody sees available playing time on a contending level team that's, you know, like I said, 1-9 of 11, like an Andrew Bogut. And he says, you know what, there's minutes available. I can go in for that playoff team, get myself on national television, and perhaps get myself one more great big deal before I retire. Greg Monroe, another buyout candidate. Vince Carter, another buyout candidate. So that's what the Pelicans have to hope for at this point.
Yeah, I think you're right. At this stage, buyout candidates are one of the best options because, like you said, they have a lot of money invested in guys that no one are going to take. No one's going to take unless you're throwing out a first round pick, which teams aren't just willing to do. And that's understandable. That's such a hot commodity in the NBA now. It's really tough to unload those big name contracts. You mentioned Dante Cunningham. As far as Wolves are concerned, that was a guy we really were hoping would come here. I'm a big Dante Cunningham fan from when he was with us a few years ago to now. I mean, he's really improved his game even just in those few years. He's a player I really appreciate. I think he's very underrated when it comes to, you know, NBA players. I don't know that he always gets the credit. I mean, he's not a big minutes guy. You're not having him in there playing, you know, 30, 35 minutes, but, you know, the 15 or so minutes, 20 minutes you're going to get from him has been really solid. You're right. I think if you mentioned Nerlens Noel, for example, I think a team like the Mavericks maybe take a good veteran like Dante Cunningham, something like that. I know here are local insiders that talk about how the Wolves in recent weeks had gone after Nerlens Noel. So he's obviously available. There's a reason why they didn't offer him a big money contract. And if you could get a guy like Nerlens Noel, I just think that would really soften the blow. I mean, he's injured currently, but if you could get him, like you said, for a second round pick, I mean, that would be a nice option. Just someone that can at least contribute and help soften that blow of losing Cousins for the season.
Well, you guys are welcome to have Dante Cunningham because he's been terrible this season. And obviously in New Orleans, we were very excited to get him back this offseason. We really wanted him. We needed those backup 4 minutes. We needed somebody who could play the three with the torn hamstring to Solomon Hill. But to be quite honest, he's been absolutely terrible this year. We joke on Twitter, every time he's put in with the defensive lineups in crunch time, he immediately allows a layup. He's shooting 31% from three this season. Last year, he was at 39%, and he doesn't take very many. We have these famous clips of him having 3 corner threes in a row and bricking all of them. He doesn't contribute anything rebounding. We like to call him alligator arms. He scores 4 points a game. But you are right. Last season, he gave the energy and the corner three shooting. That's the problem. He does nothing beyond stand in the corner on offense and wait for a three. And then he usually passes them up. He only takes 1.3 a game in over 20 minutes. So he had a stat line, I want to say 3 games ago, of like 28 minutes, 0 points, 1 rebound, 0 assists. It's just shocking that he just can't collect anything when he's on the court for that substantial amount of time. But he's been somebody who's really hurt the Pelicans this season because they really need those minutes from him. They need a quality depth guy. And the only quality depth guy they have at this point is Darius Miller. And now they're in this position where they have to start either Dante Cunningham at the four and put AD at the five, or they have to start Ashik. And both of these guys, you could argue, the way they've been playing with the Pelicans this season, don't belong on an NBA roster. So if some team wanted to come in and get Dante, I'm sure he'd be available at this point, especially at that, I think it's $3.3 million cap level. The Pelicans are so close to the dead cap. They're just $1.1 million away from it. They don't have flexibility to bring in anybody, even if they wanted to. But if somebody just took Dante into their space, that would give them $4.4 million of breathing room. And that alone could be very attractive to a buyout candidate because they still have $5 million of their mid-level exceptions. So they could offer somebody almost $5 million to play the remaining 34 games of the season. And that could potentially be huge to bring in a guy like the guys we previously mentioned.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Dante had such a down year. And it still surprises me. But I wonder if there's some sort of a match. You kind of have to find another team that has someone that maybe just needs to change the scenery. So yeah. Let's look at the Wolves, for example. You know, I'm a big Dante Cunningham fan in the past, but like you said, he struggled in New Orleans this year, big difference from last year. You wonder if you could go with, like, obviously this is just spitballing, but something like, we'll take Dante, we'll throw you guys Shabazz Muhammad as a bench piece. Shabazz is one of my favorite players, but just he has not been able to do much in Minnesota. Now, granted, he's not getting the minutes, but when he does get minutes, he struggles, very similar to your issue with Dante Cunningham. So a player like that, where maybe a couple guys just need to change the scenery, and if Dante can contribute to a playoff team, maybe he finds a way to find a new level. It's tough to say because the Pelicans have been so good. You'd think he'd find that way to contribute. I mean, historically, Dante's been a guy that's been really good defensively. And like you mentioned last year, he shot well from the three, and he just hasn't had it this season. So maybe a change of scenery is something they need, and Maybe there's a willing partner out there. It's tough to say.
Yeah, I know that Muhammad has another year. I don't know if that's a player option or a team option. I know the Pelicans are not interested in taking on any more salary at all because they're going to need all of it to bring back Boogie. Isn't that hilarious? What a pickle they're in now with their future going forward. They've got so much money tied into Solomon Hill, Omar Ashik, Alexis Ejinsa, Anthony Davis, and Drew Holiday's cap number of $25 million isn't that bad in itself, but he's also got another $25 million in incentives built into his contract. And unfortunately, you have to account for those maybe dollars whenever you reach your salary cap threshold. So even though he's only technically making $25 million, according to the cap sheet, he's actually making $30 million. It's confusing stuff. We're trying our best to figure it out ourselves. But sure. at least Muhammad would buy another $1.8 million in space, which could be enough to I don't know, make it attractive to somebody like Andrew Bogut. Maybe the difference between $1 million and $3 million is all it takes to get him playing starter level minutes in New Orleans. So I definitely know that Dell Demps is furiously on the phone at this point because he's got 2 weeks essentially to save his job. So if he sleeps a minute between now and then, that's on him.
What have your thoughts been this season on Drew Holiday? Obviously, last offseason, you guys didn't really have a choice given your cap situation. That was the guy you had to bring in because you could obviously with him, you're able to, you know, sign him going over and there wasn't a lot of options. This is what you had to do. What have your thoughts been as far as bringing him back this season?
I was one of his harshest critics going into this offseason. I didn't understand the contract at all. I was thinking somewhere around 5 years, $90 million. And the only real competition for Drew Holiday was the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Indiana Pacers. And as soon as the Wolves signed Jeff Teague, I just didn't see a universe in which Victor Oladipo hadn't been traded as of that moment. But just based on the cap flexibility that the Pacers had, they couldn't have offered him beyond like 4 years and $75 million. And I was like, is that really enough to pry him away? If he was pried away at that point, he just didn't want to stay. But the Pelicans knew they had to overpay him because the Pelicans just aren't winners. It's not a great culture. It's not a great basketball town. So that they gave him a lot more than they needed to. And we criticized Dell Demps for that because he was absolutely awful in the 25 games he played with DeMarcus Cousins last year. And really with the first 12 games he played this year with Boogie, it wasn't until Rajon Rondo got into the lineup that he really started shooting better. And now not only has his defensive level ridden to all NBA, but offensively, he's just gotten better and better. The first month of the year, he was 45%, then 46, then 53 in December, and now he's 52. Like I said, 57% from two-point range, which is a career high for him. He's fallen off a cliff from three-point range, but he's only shooting, let's see, about four of those a game. So while that number needs to rise, at 21 points per game, at five assists and five rebounds, a lockdown defender defensively, if he's playing in the East right now, he's potentially an all-star. It's between him and Oladipo. But he's just bounced back in such a monumental way, and nobody could be more excited about it than the Pelicans fans, because we were terrified. This five-year, $150 million incentive contract was just the end of the franchise. I mean, at that point, you can't get out of that contract until 2022. It's immovable. Nobody's going to take a point guard slash combo guard who gives you 15 points a game for $30 million a year. So we thought we were stuck. To watch him bounce back, and not only bounce back, but have a career year, man, it's just been something to behold. And in crunch time, he's just been automatic the past 3 weeks. Part of this 9 games out of 11 streak, you have to give a large portion of it to him, because when you talk about the clutch scorers, DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis, no, it's been Jrue Holiday. It's been Jrue Holiday who's gotten them the buckets and the mid-range game and the floater that they needed, taking these bigs off the dribble. He has been so crucial to the Pelicans' success, and nobody's more surprised about it than I am.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, the recent run of success. If you look at some of his games, 31 points, 27 points, 25 points, and on top of that, you're talking, you know, 7 dimes. 8 assists, you know, he's getting, you know, 2, 3, 4 steals a game. I mean, you're getting everything you'd want from a guy that you really had to overpay at that time. So definitely you're starting to see the Jrue Holiday that, you know, we used to get a few years ago, where you're thinking this is one of the top point guards in the league, you know, prior to some of these injuries he's had. It's nice for the Pelicans to finally see that production match the kind of money he's being paid. Let me move in here to next week's matchup. Next Saturday, you guys are coming here to play the Wolves. What are your thoughts on this matchup? Obviously, being down Cousins, that's going to make it tough, but who do you think needs to step up for you guys to get a win there?
I mean, on any given night, the Pelicans can beat anybody because they've got Anthony Davis. And when Anthony Davis goes toe-to-toe with Karl Anthony Towns, he usually puts the spotlight on himself, and he takes the young man a task. And the two guys they relish playing against each other, and it's exciting to watch. With that being said, the Wolves have had the Pels number this year, and the Pelicans haven't been able to stop them. No matter how well they're playing, they always manage to let it go at the end. But this is an important time for the Pelicans. We're really going to learn so much about these Pelicans today against the Clippers. We're going to see how much fight is left in them, what that bench, that depth can possibly contribute. By the time we get to the Wolves next week, we'll have a lot more questions answered. But, you know, you love seeing Jrue Holiday matched up with Jimmy Butler, with Jeff Teague. That's always something that's going to be exciting. Like I said, Anthony Davis against Karl Anthony Towns. They're probably going to put a second body on him, whether it's Gorgui Dieng or Bielitsa or some big guy just to make Anthony Davis get rid of the ball. And then you've got to rely on shooters. Darius Miller and Etuan Moore have been two of the best 10 shooters in the NBA this season. Darius Miller has been a very pleasant surprise. He's been automatic from three. Not only that, he has this new game where he can put the ball on the floor and take a deep mid-range jumper. And it's sexy. It's beautiful. It goes in every time. Whenever he takes that shot, I'm just sure it's going to go in. He's just become a very dynamic scorer, and his game is expanding. So those are two guys you're going to have to hope. You're going to have to hope Jameer Nelson can. He's been in and out lately this season. He was hot the first 2 weeks with the Pelicans, and he's been more liability than anything else, not just defensively, but he's also fallen off in shooting. And after that, there's just not a lot to point to. Ian Clark comes in and out of the lineup. He gets DNPs, and then all of a sudden he's giving you crunch time minutes a week later. Hopefully we'll get Tony Allen back before the Wolves game. He's been out for about 8 weeks. He had a setback, but hopefully we'll have him back by then. We definitely need his energy, and we definitely need his minutes. And Solomon Hill is said to come back in February. If there's any chance of the Pelicans salvaging their season, they're definitely going to need him, and they're going to need him to play some four, and he's going to have some interesting matchups. He's a guy that could really frustrate somebody like an Andrew Wiggins, because right now the Pelicans don't have a guy to slow down Andrew Wiggins. You saw what he did to Etuan Moore. I think they had to pull Etuan Moore 4 minutes in and put him back to his natural position at the two. And then they put Dante Cunningham on Andrew Wiggins, and that's another minus for the Pelicans offensively. Plus, Dante Cunningham is prone to mental lapses, lack of awareness on the defensive side of the floor. So it's going to be tough, but really you're just going to have to hope for an explosive game from Jrue Holiday and Anthony Davis, and just the bench doing just enough to frustrate the Wolves. We've been playing a lot better defensively. We've been top 10 in the past 3 weeks. So if we can limit the Wolves scoring and get just enough scoring from our guys like the Darius Millers and the Etuan Moores, in addition to the Jrue Holiday and the Anthony Davis, there might be a chance. But like I said, we're really going to find out who these Pelicans are today against the Clippers. If they come out with fight and they win this game, then the Timberwolves need to take watch. But I think what we're all afraid of is that they just don't have enough able bodies to play basketball. And if they lose this one, the Clippers, then you've got the Kings on Tuesday. If they manage to lose that one, then you've got the Thunder. After the Wolves, you've got the Jazz, the Pacers. The Pelicans could find themselves out of this playoff loop very quickly.
And you're right, it doesn't take much in the West. There's so many good teams, whether it's, you know, these rebuilding teams that just find ways to win, like the Kings, that put, you know, young guys that are going to put up a really big fight. But you talked about the Clippers, you know, we just played them recently, and every single night you get 100% from Blake Griffin. It's always a tough matchup. You mentioned the Thunder, you know, the Thunder just had Robertson get that injury. So, you know, that might be a game where you can take one, because they've been pretty inconsistent. But you're right, a lot of it's going to, you know, be shown this week. What you guys are going to have going forward, you'll obviously kind of get a feel for what the rotations are going to be. And I think from a coaching aspect, that's always tough when you lose arguably your best player. You got to find ways to match that production, whether it's with, you know, 2-3 guys, whether it's with, you know, 4 guys, depending on, you know, who steps up. Obviously it's going to be tough, but you're right. I think we'll have a better idea of where you guys are at come next Saturday's game. The goofy thing about next Saturday's game is obviously it's the Super Bowl weekend. It's going to be an interesting mishmash of crowd at the Wolves game. My understanding is it's pretty much already a sellout. I don't know how many of those people are Wolves fans, though. You might have a lot of out-of-market guys that just want to go see the game prior to the Super Bowl. So you're definitely going to get an interesting fan base for next Saturday's game. But in terms of just what the Wolves have to offer versus what the Pelicans have, like you said, Anthony Davis always finds a way to bring it. And one of the things that whether it's Cousins, whether it's Davis, whenever we play really talented big men, the Karl Towns matchup always seems to come to the forefront, because he has a tendency to sometimes get upset, or he gets rattled real easily. And if you can rattle Towns with Anthony Davis, maybe get him in foul trouble, which, you know, in past games against the Pelicans, that's been an issue. I think that's one of the ways you guys could maybe find a way to squeak something out. But like you said, this week's going to kind of tell us everything we need to know.
Yeah, and one guy I did forget to mention, DeAndre Liggins, is currently on the back end of a 10-day contract. You'd have to think he gets a second one. He's definitely somebody that's going to get a heavy workload on Andrew Wiggins and Jimmy Butler. They're going to try everything they can to slow those guys down, because they did take such advantage of the Pelicans last time, and the Pelicans just can't afford to get down double digits early, because right now all they have is motivation and effort. They don't have talent. They don't have depth. They have to stay in it. They have to keep motivated. They have to keep hungry, because if somebody like the Wolves, and that's a nice advantage, and I'm glad that I know that it's going to be a mixed crowd, because, you know, with the current streak the Wolves have been on, I think they were like 12-3 from mid-December to early January at one point. With that winning percentage, if their crowd is behind them and they get up double digits early, that might be all it takes to bury this Pelicans team. So definitely going to need to keep it tight. Definitely going to need DeAndre Liggins to play out of his body and slow down those two critical scores for the Wolves. And who knows? Obviously, the bets are against the Pelicans on every game going forward, minus maybe the Sacramento Kings. But one thing you can guarantee on is that Anthony Davis will play well. Jrue Holiday will play well. And in the next 2 weeks, these guys are going to try, but the odds are long against them.
I mean, as a Wolves fan, you know, I don't look for other teams' success, but you never hope for injuries. So, you know, we wish DeMarcus Cousins a speedy recovery, because if you're going to play teams, you always want to play them at their best, just to kind of see where you're at. So, again, we wish you for a speedy recovery. Thanks again, Preston, for joining us here. This is really appreciated. It was nice to kind of look at the Pelicans going forward, kind of take a glance at the game coming up, and we appreciate you taking time out of your day.
No, I appreciate it. Everybody can follow us at the Bird Rights and at Orlando Pinstripe Post. I hope I wasn't too much of a downer. Like I said, things are rough in New Orleans right now. It was one of those scenarios where after the game, nobody wanted to talk to each other. Even the next morning, most of the major websites in New Orleans didn't post anything. And if they did post anything, it was just, hey, we wish the best for DeMarcus Cousins. We couldn't get a recap out of most of the guys in our area. It's just, it's a tough time to be a Pelicans fan. And man, if they can get a win against the Clippers today, then the Wolves have a lot to be concerned about, because it could be one of the better underdog stories going forward. Bill Simmons calls it the Ewing theory. If the Pelicans can manage to come to life and get a buyout candidate like an Andrew Bogut, look out. This could become a national media type spotlight story. But like I said, the odds are long against that. But thank you so much, Rob. It's been a blast, and I'm willing to come on here anytime you guys want.
We appreciate it. Thanks again.
You got it. You have been listening to The Bird Calls. Thank you for listening. If you like what you're hearing, do us one more favor. Go to iTunes, subscribe, and rate our podcast today.